The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Disney films where Muslims are imprisoned in China.
This is the same company that refuses to film in certain states in America because of their pro-life policy.
The paper uses unnamed sources to disparage the president.
Who are you going to believe? The 15 people who were there in the room and are willing to go on the record, or the four anonymous sources?
Protesters harass diners.
Until these criminals on the streets recognize there are consequences for their actions, they're going to continue to commit these crimes.
And we'll look at the politics at play.
The left has taught a generation of blacks that they can literally do no wrong.
I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time and on demand 24/7. Learn more at hughhewitt.com, and let me invite you to join us now by video. And please follow me on Twitter at Hugh Hewitt. Follow this program at Town Hall Review. This week, the Academy Awards announced new inclusive guidelines for any movie which wants Best Picture consideration. The industry generally has come under fire because of the desire of Chinese audiences to see white stars in its blockbuster movies, a desire to which they have acceded. And a week ago, Disney released the live-action remake of Mulan, filmed in Zhejiang, where Uyghur Muslims are kept in what many describe as concentration camps. To make matters worse, in the Mulan credits, Disney thanked the very same Chinese secret police that have oppressed the Muslims living in the area. I discussed the situation with Wisconsin Congressman Mike Gallagher on The Hugh Hewitt Show. Mulan is coming out not without controversy. I did not realize they shot this throughout China. I did not realize they shot this probably within driving an hour distance of concentration camps, Mike Gallagher. What is Disney saying about this?
There are a few things that truly shock me these days. But I have to say that the fact that Disney went out of its way to thank not one, not two, not three, but four Chinese Communist Party propaganda departments, along with the Public Security Bureau of Turpin in Xinjiang, which the Trump administration put on the entity list last fall due to its complicity in human rights abuses, is unconscionable. All you have to do is open a paper these days to read one shocking description after another of the heartbreaking details from Xinjiang, from mass sterilization to rape to forced labor and concentration camps, to realize how evil this practice is what's happening in that province. And now we find out that not only did Disney personnel work on location in the middle of Xinjiang's concentration camps, but they actively collaborated with and thanked some of the security forces directly responsible for these crimes against humanity in their credits. And to top it all off, Hugh, Disney altered the story's traditional telling to portray Xinjiang as an indelible part of China that Mulan must defend at all costs. This is crazy. This is the same company that refuses to film in certain states in America because of their pro-life policy. This is absolutely absurd. And it's long time past time to do something about Hollywood's obsequious when it comes to the CCP.
Have you had any response? I saw your statement, but I saw a number of statements. Disney typically acts like Disney and doesn't say anything. Is that what's happened?
So far, but I'm hoping that we can put some pressure on them. I was sort of joking on a podcast with Jonah Goldberg, our mutual friend, that there should be a disclaimer accompanying each movie playing in the U.S. That has also been approved to play in China and therefore has the stamp of approval from CCP censors. The idea would be to play a splash screen before the movie starts, warning audiences that the movie's content has been approved and censored by the CCP. And I got inspiration for this disclaimer, ironically, from the Humane Society certification that you see at the end of movies about no animals being harmed in the course of the production. And what's really incredible about Mulan is that right as the credits list all these Xinjiang human rights abusers, Hugh, that cooperated with the production, immediately below, the credits proudly display that no animals were harmed in the making of this movie. So no animals harmed, just human beings put in concentration camp.
The CCP strikes back. They have boycotted Australia. They have boycotted Norway. They strike back at whoever messes with them. Disney has a theme park in Shanghai. Disney sells its movies everywhere in China. Is it realistic for a company that has shareholders to actually do what you're talking about? This is different because they didn't have to roll that credit, but to come out and denounce Xinjiang's human rights abuses, which are massive, is it realistic to expect them to do that?
I think it is. I think it was interesting. I met with a group of screenwriters, TV screenwriters, when I was doing my cyber commission with Senator Angus King. And they sort of quite candidly told us behind closed doors that when the NBA experienced punishment from the Chinese Communist Party in the wake of Daryl Morey's tweet in support of Hong Kong, they said that no one needed to send the memo to Hollywood because it was received loud and clear. And the message was, don't mess with us or we will hurt your bottom line. So what you are pointing out is absolutely true. Chris Fenton, a Hollywood executive, recently wrote a great book about the way that Hollywood has bent the knee to General Secretary Xi and the NBA has bent the knee to General Secretary Xi. But at the end of the day, I think these companies, which are extremely successful and wealthy, primarily because of the environment in which they were allowed to grow in America, have to decide which team they're playing for. And it doesn't mean you can't do business at all with China. It doesn't mean that Wisconsin farmers can't sell soybeans to China or that American consumers can't buy cheap T-shirts from China. But I do think we have to draw the line when it comes to things as egregious as contributing to the human rights abuses like we're seeing in Xinjiang province. I do think we're going to have to figure out some form of selective decoupling from China. And even if that hurts these companies' bottom line in the short term, over the long term, they have to know that there's far more opportunity and far more customers in the free world. And oh, by the way, you know, how about the uncalculable benefit of being able to sleep at night knowing that you're not patting human rights abusers on the back and knowing that you're actually contributing to America winning this competition for what we want the next 100 years to look like.
Now, I can hear a Hollywood producer saying, oh, moralism for me, but not for thee. You want Wisconsin farmers to be able to sell into China, but you don't want us to be able to sell into China.
Well, as I said, I mean, we need some form of selective decoupling. And when it comes to technology that the Chinese Communist Party could actively use to abuse the rights of human beings living in Xinjiang province, or when it comes to technology that the Chinese Communist Party could use to build missiles that could sink American ships in a future war, I think we have to draw the line. And to my knowledge, they have not found a way to weaponize soybeans, although we have been getting all these mysterious packages of seeds sent from China around the United States. So maybe there will come a point when soybeans are no longer safe for us to trade.
But I will also say the difference is between selling a product and praising a state police. When they roll the credits and they're praising the organs of the state that actively suppress murder, that crosses the line.
Well, the other line I think it's important to recognize is it's one thing to just accept the fact that the CCP is going to censor material in their own country. That's inevitable. That's why most social media companies are not allowed in China. But it's another thing to export that model of censorship around the world and force, for example, people doing Zoom meetings about human rights issues in Hong Kong to shut those meetings down, even if the organizers are not in mainland China.
The Atlantic broke a story that had all of media buzzing, at least until Bob Woodward excerpts dropped. The claim is that President Donald Trump called Americans who died in World War I losers and suckers way back in 2018. The sources that alleged this were unnamed. Rather quickly, others said in no uncertain terms that Trump never said any of those things. Regardless, the willing media ran with the Atlantic story as if they were all there in the room and heard it themselves. In the day and age where media bias is increasingly overt, anonymous sources now trump name sources. Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan looked at the death of journalism while on with Bob Franz on AM 1420, The Answer, in Cleveland, Ohio.
The Atlantic ran a story that the left has picked up and run as it's got to be the God's honest truth, because four anonymous individuals who would not put their names to a report alleged that President Trump 2 full years ago, of course, they would not have mentioned this 2 years ago when it happened in their shock and disgust at such a terrible thing, says that the president called soldiers lying in the ground in France losers and suckers. And that's why he didn't want to go and visit them on a trip to Europe in 2018. I'm just going to let you have at it here, Congressman. What do you think?
Well, no, it's everyone knows it's ridiculous. Everyone knows it's fake news. You got 15 people who said this is BS, this is baloney, this is fake news. You got four, as you said, anonymous people say, oh, no, it's said it. So who are you going to believe? The 15 people who were there in the room and are willing to go on the record, or the four anonymous sources written by an article, written by an author in The Atlantic? And The Atlantic author, think about this, Bob. They could have also quoted John Bolton, who gave the reason that they didn't go, saying it was the weather. They could have quoted him, and they were certainly willing to quote John Bolton all kinds of times just a little over a year ago, or a little less than a year ago during the impeachment. So, come on. Everyone can see this for what it is. There's a reason why fake news was trending, I think, on Friday or Thursday, whenever this story came out last week, because everyone knows it's just that fake news.
Well, you know, and John Bolton, by the way, came out. First of all, he denied this ever happened a couple of days ago. He mentioned specifically and said this is absolutely false. He was there the entire time. This was never said. And also, Zach Fuentes, the top aide to General John Kelly, who, of course, was chief of staff at the time, said absolutely not. I was also by his side during this, and it did not happen. And, quote, do you honestly think General Kelly would have stood by and let anyone call fallen Marines losers?
No, exactly.
Can you? I mean, and that this would be kept silent even after John Kelly was fired as chief of staff, even after all of the things. General Mattis was removed as defense secretary. That they were all going to just sit by and keep this quiet. Honestly,
no. And the left does not. The left is not beholden to the. I mean, the left does not adhere to the truth. The left will just say whatever they think helps them. And in their mind, the end justifies the means. And the end that they want is they want to try to get rid of President Trump. And they've been out to get him since before he was elected. The other thing I will tell you is I've been around this president a lot. And I know how much he does care for our troops, for our law enforcement, for our veterans. I have seen him in the Oval Office signing things. He tells me about the times he's had to sign things to families who have lost someone serving in uniform for our country. I know what this president is like. And that is, this is not even, this is such a joke. And again, I think the American people see it.
Coming up, Senator Tom Cotton on the attacks on diners.
Until these criminals on the streets recognize there are consequences for their actions, they're going to continue to commit these crimes.
The Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt continues in a moment. This COVID-19 crisis has been straining the limits of our constitutional system. Over the next few years, we'll see a generation of new and grounded policy leaders emerge. They'll be prepared at Pepperdine's Graduate School of Public Policy. Learn more about the deadline for application at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Early on, protesting gave way to rioting and then to looting. Then protesters started marching through neighborhoods. Now that marching has devolved into harassing people as they eat in restaurants. Each step along the way, there are a few arrests and the protesters become more bold in the harassment of the people trying to live their lives in peace. Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton joined me for a look at those who increasingly target everyday citizens. It's the anniversary of Colonel Vindman's call to the whistleblower that set off the impeachment. And Byron's new book, Obsession, details this. Do you believe if that had not happened, we would have responded better to the Wuhan virus?
Hugh, there's no doubt that in December and January, Washington was consumed with that partisan impeachment trial. I can tell you, as someone who was trying to sound the alarm as early as mid-January, most senators, both parties, and most congressmen kind of looked at me with a curious stare in their face. This is not something about which they had heard. So you're probably right that if we had not been focused on that party line impeachment vote and trial, then we might have had a little more bandwidth among some people in Washington and in the media to focus on what was happening in Wuhan in December and early January.
I think when people finish reading Byron's book, Obsession, they're just really going to reconsider Colonel Vindman's testimony. A brave American soldier, no doubt about it, Purple Heart, but I think a very, very terrible miscalculation of judgment. Now, Senator Cotton, in Pittsburgh, diners were assaulted again. That makes Rochester, Pittsburgh, Washington, D.C., of course, the unrest in Kenosha, the unrest in Portland. How long is this going to go on, and what is its impact on the election, in your opinion?
Well, Hugh, unfortunately, it's probably going to go on as long as these Democratic mayors and governors do not use the police in force and, if necessary, against the riots at nighttime, the National Guard, to deter this criminal behavior. And if the police are not allowed to arrest these criminals and prosecutors do not charge them with every crime they've committed until these criminals on the streets recognize there are consequences for their actions, they're going to continue to commit these crimes. Obviously, there's a difference between what we've seen in places like Portland and Kenosha in terms of the rioting, the arson, the looting, versus the mobs who have accosted diners on sidewalk cafes in Washington and Rochester and Pittsburgh. But I don't see how a city can allow those mobs to accost diners. Again, they did nothing wrong. I mean, it's not like they were even showing up to counter-protest these criminals. They were just dining. They happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. Hugh, it's been a long time since I practiced law, and you're the expert lawyer, but it seems to me that some of these incidents run pretty close to assault.
Well,
aggressive prosecutor that wanted to defend public safety, they would start bringing assault charges.
I believe they are assault. At Michigan, I took crimes from Peter Weston, who's still teaching there. And it was, you know, I can remember the definition, the imminent appearance of an unpermitted touching is an assault. And so if someone comes over, grabs your beer and looms over you, that's an assault. Battery is when you touch someone with an unpermitted touching. I just think that the country is looking at that and they're appalled at people who are not enforcing the law. And I can you imagine Little Rock allowing this?
Yeah, and we don't have to imagine what the Biden administration would do under such circumstances. They're not going to call for local police departments to be allowed to do their job, or they're not going to encourage governors to use the National Guard against rioters. They're going to spend their time harassing and even prosecuting police departments, because that's exactly what we saw in the Obama-Biden Department of Justice. They consistently blamed the police first. They required police to sign onerous consent decrees in federal court to limit policing tactics, and crime invariably went up in cities where the police were handcuffed by the Obama-Biden DOJ, to say nothing of their Democratic mayors. It's just one more reason why it's so important that we reelect the president. Only
Let me ask
Donald
you,
Trump will stand up for law-abiding citizens and law enforcement. Joe Biden will stand with these mobs.
My friend and colleague Dennis Prager also took issue with those who harassed diners. As he usually does, Dennis got to the root of the problem.
Daily Mail, protesters who were captured on video yelling at outdoor restaurant patrons claim the confrontation was sparked after a group of men shouted, "Blue Lives Matter." And one man swung a bike. So I don't quite understand. You can have a mob attack people while eating because somebody yelled "Blue Lives Matter"? The demonstrators were speaking out after a video of them yelling at diners in Rochester, New York, and swiping a drink from an elderly couple and downing it in front of them was shared on social media. The protesters were heard calling the diners embarrassments and surrounding the tables. You have to see these videos. This is unique. This has not happened in American history, to the best of my knowledge. Not on, isolated incidents, but nothing like this. If your kid that marches for BLM right now, you just got to tell them you're marching for evil. You're not marching for blacks. You're marching for an evil organization. Okay? You may mean well, but meaning well in life means nothing. And then spell it. N-O-T-H-I-N-G. It means nothing. Now, let's see here. Even though people at the restaurant saw that whole thing, they still saw me as an aggressor. Nike Kraft, a protester at the event, told Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I don't understand that. According to Nike Kraft, who identifies as non-binary, so that this person identifies as neither male nor female, the incident sparked when protesters marched through the area and three men shouted, "Blue Lives Matter." Oh, that's it. That's all you need to attack people, somebody yelling, "Blue Lives Matter." Kraft said that the older man seen in footage chastised protesters for their actions. His wife, however, invited Kraft over for a drink and to discuss the situation. So, being a theatrical, snarky type of person that I am, I said that I don't have time to wait for you to order another beer. I will take the one you have. That's something? You should have seen this black woman go over to the couple and just take their drink and drink it down. Because in her view, she can. Because the left has told her that good and evil are not what distinguish humans. Black and white does. So a black can do anything to a white. That is what she believes, because that's what she learned from the left. I have warned about this all of my life. The Judeo-Christian division of humanity is between the decent and the indecent. The left-wing definition is between strong and weak, between worker and owner, between black and white. The division is not moral. Morality changes depending on what group you are in. Secular conservatives who thought we could sustain a decent society without religious bases were wrong the whole time, as I have written and warned. They're great people, these secular conservatives, but they don't understand how important the Judeo-Christian bases of the society are. There is a perfect example. The left has taught a generation of blacks that they can literally do no wrong. You loot, that's fine. You scream obscenities at white elderly people dining, that's fine.
Coming up.
People of color should never, ever vote for a party that gave you slavery, the KKK, Jim Crow laws, and even to this day are still trying to identify people by their ethnicity.
Bishop Aubrey Shines, when the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt continues in a moment. Our program is coming in today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. They are preparing grounded leaders who are impacting public policy and serving in the public square. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Bishop Aubrey Shine chairs the Conservative Clergy of Color, which is working to unite Americans in this time of so much strife. One of his goals is to educate his fellow Americans on which party he believes is far better on race relations. He joined Salem syndicated host Sebastian Gorka.
What is this initiative, this organization, Conservative Clergy of Color?
Well, we are a bunch of guys that have been doing work in our civic government for a long period of time. We're clergymen, but we have always been outspoken as it relates to conservative issues regarding this nation. You've probably seen at least an op-ed or so that I've done, even in the Times, when the question was asked, is America racist? I said, sure, and it came by one political party. And this is what we do. Now, while we don't endorse a candidate individually, Sebastian, I have done a ton of work. I'm the only clergy in America that when Hillary Clinton wrote her book, Why She Lost, she named me by name.
Did you put that on your resume, Bishop Shines? Did you add that to your resume?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I did, my friend. I tell you, it's probably one of the highlights. I produced, Sebastian, a five-minute video showing the historical root of the Democratic Party during that time and why people of color should never, ever vote for a party that gave you slavery, the KKK, Jim Crow laws, and even to this day are still trying to identify people by their ethnicity. And so we fight against things like that. Conservative clergy of color, we are just here to give an alternative, especially to black and brown and white America, that the mainstream media does not represent the views of all Americans. And Sebastian, that's what we do in a nutshell.
Fabulous. So what did you announce? What is your latest pushback concerning?
Well, we went straight for Nike CEO John Donahue, and we just simply said this. You are contributing millions of dollars to a Marxist organization called the Black Lives Matter movement. And what happens in a nutshell is that when you contribute money to a Marxist group that hates America, hates our Judeo-Christian ethos, that hates the concept of what is called heteronormative homes, that you, Mr. Nike, you are forgetting about the oppression that is going on in China, that they are using slave labor, whether they're the Uyghurs and or Christians that are being oppressed. And so when you put your foot soldiers like Colin Kaepernick and or LeBron James in the front, you are harming Americans. And we're calling them out to simply say, you must stop this behavior because you're helping sow seeds of racial divisiveness within the fabric of our nation. And Sebastian, we just think that they can do better. So we're taking these guys to task, simply saying, enough is enough. And whether you're black or white, we better work together if we're going to preserve this great union.
So has there ever been any justification from the likes of Nike or LeBron James for the fact that their products, the things they sell, the things they brand themselves as, are actually tied to the biggest communist nation in the world, a nation that has slave labor camps? Is there any justification they've given us?
No, they haven't given us anything, but we know that the moment that those guys begin to talk, like LeBron James, Steve Kerr, and everyone else, they're shut down, and then they become, again, the foot soldiers of these corporations, because what most Americans have not, until groups like ourselves have come along, to say is, hey, this is what they're doing. They're telling you about some alleged injustice in this country. Are you aware that your products are, and then we kind of fill in the blanks here. Once people begin to find out, of course, my friend, they're not going to say anything about that. Why? Because they're making money, and they're making money on the ignorance that has unfortunately been permeated throughout the fabric of our society, simply because we have dishonest men and women that work in social media, mainstream media. They won't talk about these issues. Well, we're talking about these issues. We are informing all Americans, black or white alike. We better work together if we're going to preserve this great nation.
Coming up, Byron York on the impeachment.
That makes him, basically, Lieutenant Colonel Venman, the source.
The Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt continues in a moment. Our program is coming today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. During the impeachment of Donald Trump, Americans were led to believe that the whistleblower was the individual who put the ball in motion. Byron York has a new book out titled Obsession, which reveals it was the National Security Council's Lieutenant Colonel Alex Vindman who was the driving force behind it all. York joined me on the Hugh Hewitt Show. It's a year since Colonel Vindman kicked off impeachment. One of the things I did not tweet about is you really methodically go through the colonel's role in this. How would you describe this as sort of groundbreaking, the focus you bring to Colonel Vindman?
Yeah, this is, you know, Republicans were very curious about how the impeachment began. Remember that it happens right as the Mueller investigation has collapsed. The report comes out, and it shows that Mueller could not establish collusion, could not establish there was conspiracy or coordination between Trump and Russia. And then Mueller appears before Congress on July 24th, 2019, and it's a disaster. So a lot of Republicans kind of let their guard down. They begin to relax, thinking, wow, maybe this is finally over. And then they get word that Adam Schiff has something. Something is going on. And then they hear there's a whistleblower, and they don't know what is going on. And there's this meeting in September with the House Intelligence Committee. And Schiff's manner says something to them. And one of the Republicans who was on the committee, Chris Stewart, said to me, he was so, I don't want to say giddy, he was so anticipating that we all noticed it. So they wondered what was going on. And then when they finally found out that there was a whistleblower, remember, for a long time, Democrats wanted the whistleblower to testify before impeachment hearings. And then all of a sudden they didn't. And they were doing everything they could to hide the identity of the whistleblower. And here's the reason it became important. Remember that a number of people had listened to the Trump-Zelensky phone call, the famous phone call with the president of the Ukraine that's the basis for the whole impeachment. And none of them thought there was anything wrong with it. Only one person, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, thought there was something wrong with it. Then, bingo, there's a whistleblower complaint. So when they finally get a chance to question Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, they say, well, okay, you were listening to the phone call. Who did you talk to outside the National Security Council? Who did you talk to? And he said, well, I talked to two people outside the National Security Council. One of them was George Kent, who handled this issue at the State Department. And the other one, and Adam Schiff says, no, you can't say who the other one. And they would never say who the other person was. And it
but
did
Lee
not
Zeldin and Jim Jordan trapped him. I mean, you recount this. They really did trap him repeatedly. There's no doubt about it. He was talking to the whistleblower.
No, there's absolutely no doubt about it. And that makes him, basically, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, the source of the whole thing. And remember, there's this really telling exchange between Vindman and John Ratcliffe, who was on the Republican on the House Intelligence Committee at the time. He's now the Director of National Intelligence. And Ratcliffe is asking Vindman, well, what was wrong with the call? I mean, did you think there was a law broken? Did you think there was some sort of improper conduct? And he said, well, I just thought something was wrong. And so, but what? And he said, well, I thought it might negatively affect U.S. relations with Ukraine or bipartisan support for Ukraine on Capitol Hill. And Ratcliffe said, that seems like a policy difference. It seems like a policy opinion. And all Vindman would say was, I thought it was wrong. And so what you have is the whole thing kind of coming down to that moment. And the person who is accusing the president says, well, it was really kind of a policy difference. And you don't impeach the president on the basis of a policy
difference. Now, one of the things I think obsession does better than anything I've done. Well, you have sources like Chris Stewart. I assume he gave you his diary. I think the Chris Stewart excerpts are amazing. Have they ever been revealed before?
They have never. We were in long talks about getting his diary, and he sent me the parts that had to do with the Intelligence Committee. I didn't read anything about, you know, home life or softball games or anything like that. But he did send me.
Yeah, it's terrific stuff. I mean, poor Adam Schiff is hapless, but Jerry Nadler is even more hapless. But I want to go back to something about Lieutenant Colonel Vindman. And you're very respectful, as the Republicans were, of his service, of his Purple Heart. Nevertheless, he talks about the interagency. And you contrast, Byron, this amorphous, Borg-like, the interagency. Now, I've been around National Security Council people forever. I know what it means, the deputies, committees, the staff. But the interagency doesn't trump the president.
Never did. And on a number of occasions, and remember, Vindman is interviewed secretly. Remember the whole secret depositions. He was interviewed secretly, and then he was interviewed in the very brief public hearings that the Intelligence Committee had. And his concern about what the president was saying in the phone call with Ukrainian President Zelensky was that it was not consistent or did not comport with the, quote, interagency consensus. And this interagency is the State Department, National Security Council, the Treasury Department, the Defense Department, and they make policy toward Ukraine. But, of course, all of those people work for the president, and the president sets U.S. foreign policy toward Ukraine and everywhere else. So the striking thing about Vindman, as you got to listen to him, was that he believed that the president was wrong because he was crossing the interagency consensus as if the president worked for the interagency as opposed to the interagency working for the president.
And Byron, do you think it will become known as the Vindman impeachment? Because by the time I'm done reading Obsession, I think to myself, this all would not have happened. We would not have been missing Wuhan in December and January, except for the actions of Colonel Vindman in September.
That's absolutely correct. There's just no doubt about it. If you look at the whistleblower, who still remains formally unidentified, if you look at the whistleblower, he learns this from Colonel Vindman. Now, what's interesting is Republicans have figured this out during impeachment. They know what's going on, but they have a difficulty dealing with Vindman. Lee Zeldin said, look, he's a member of the House. Vindman was the person on the call who went to the whistleblower after the call to give the whistleblower the information he needed to file his complaint. Ultimately, we know Vindman is the person talking to the whistleblower. That was from another senior Republican aide. But at the same time, Vindman was a decorated veteran. Republicans did not feel comfortable attacking him. Part of the reason that the whistleblower ultimately was never officially confirmed was because Vindman was a decorated military person. Republicans were uneasy about going after Vindman because of his military service.
For the rest of my conversation with Byron York, go to townhallreview.com. Coming up,
where our unemployment rate's below 6%. I actually ended the year with a budget surplus.
The remarkable story of South Dakota, when we return with the final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. If you enjoy the Town Hall Review and you are a person of faith, let me introduce you to another podcast I think you'll like. It's the Christian Outlook, and in it you'll hear the leading voices in the Christian world engaging the issue of the day. With Election Day fast approaching, America's attention turns to the presidential debates.
I don't think that the debates are primarily to inform. I do think they are about each side trying to offer, you know, their best spin on the facts.
We'll look at our populist moment.
It would be a huge mistake to assume that Biden is going to win. I would say today is a jump ball.
A Supreme Court case that will shape the future of religious liberty in our nation.
It is going to set a massive precedent, and religious liberty is very much on the line.
And Oz Guinness on our polarized nation.
The American Revolution itself is being called into question.
We've got all this and more. To subscribe, go to ChristianOutlook.com. That's ChristianOutlook.com. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. When COVID-19 hit America and states quickly shut down, one state refused to play along. Kristi Noem, the governor of South Dakota, realized her sparsely populated state does not need to close up businesses or schools. She appealed to the public to take appropriate precautions, and her gamble paid off. She told the story of her state while on with Bob Franz on AM 1420 The Answer in Cleveland, Ohio.
I want to talk about what you have done in your state.
So we had our first cases back in March. I think March 10th was when we identified our first cases in the state of South Dakota. But I had opened up an emergency operations center back in January preparing. So I listened to my health officials, my state epidemiologist, my secretary of health, and my experts within my hospital systems. But I also consulted with my general counsel and several attorneys that specialized in, you know, our Constitution, the state Constitution and the U.S. Constitution, and found out what my authorities were as governor, what I did not have the authority to do, and then used all of that to make every decision going through the last several months. So, you know, we did not shut down any businesses in the state of South Dakota. I didn't even define what an essential business was. I didn't feel I had the authority to tell you your business wasn't essential. Never issued a shelter in place or mandated masking. Really, what I did is I told the people of South Dakota that I was going to be transparent. I would give them all the information that I had and that I was going to trust them, give them the flexibility they needed to protect their family, but also keep a roof over their head and food on their tables. So we're doing very well in South Dakota. We've, you know, got less than 100 people in the hospital. The experts told me I'd have up to 10,000 in the hospital, and we have not seen anything close to that. Our economy has been named the strongest in the nation, where our unemployment rate's below 6%. I actually ended the year with a budget surplus, and our sales tax is going through the roof. That's really all that we have. In South Dakota, we don't have an income tax or personal property tax. So people are coming, they're visiting, they're moving their businesses there because they've appreciated the fact that I counted on folks to use their personal responsibility to make decisions that were best for them. South Dakota was a small state, but we also could be an example to the nation. And I think we never recognized or thought that it would happen during a pandemic, but it really has been a place where we've utilized and not overstepped our authorities, and it benefited our economy, but it's benefited our families there too. So it is a way that we can be an example of how conservative policies and flexibilities really do help people live free. There's never been such a clear choice between what Republicans stand for and what Democrats stand for, what President Trump is fighting for and fighting for you every day versus what Joe Biden would do if he were given the chance to be in leadership. Listen, if you have a leader that oversteps their authorities in a time of crisis, that's when we lose this country. And Joe Biden's been very clear that that's exactly what he's going to do.
Thank you for joining us for the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Catch up on earlier episodes at our website, townhallreview.com. Sign up for a daily dose of the best in talk radio. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Schubin, producer Charlie Richard, David Posian, Michael Cook, Adam Ramsey, Ben Brigman, Harley Eady, and Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for joining us.